and gentlemen, welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Moman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. For some reason, the sound will not turn down tonight. It's always a good time. All right. I can fix that problem, too. Oh, maybe. Apparently, the whole panel's not going to respond tonight. All right. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Moman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. Folks, I apologize for not being here last week. Last week, I was at the Libertarian National Convention in Columbus, Ohio, and the convention wrapped up not long before the show was supposed to go on the air. It actually ran very, very long, and as a result, it went way long. I didn't have time to prepare anything, and so I just hurried up. I had a best of show queued up, so I went ahead and uploaded that and played it. I hope you enjoyed it. I believe it was the Industrial Hemp Show. I think it was, like I said, kind of a quick and dirty fix because I needed something in a flash. So do appreciate your patience on that, folks. And we are back here live this week, as we are almost every week. And co-host Dave is in the house. He's having some technical difficulties, but we'll deal with those as they come along. If you'd like to call in tonight about anything we talk about, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And we will not be taking calls until the second half of the show. That is the format now that, in case you haven't tuned in a while, that is the format for the show. We do the monologue section first, and then we get into comments, and hopefully co-host Dave, assuming technical difficulties get resolved somewhere along the way. All right, well, to get started, let's start like we do every week with the randomly generated political rhetoric, and I'm just going to go with what I've got here. So the rhetoric this week is, my opponent is working with pharmaceutical companies, corrupt politicians, and tribal warlords. And always enjoy the political rhetoric generator. Always a good time. Sometimes they're better than others, but always there for entertainment purposes. All right, let's see here. This week's correlation, random correlation, spurious correlation, is that the number of, this is a corollary, there's a correlation between the number of people who died by becoming tangled in their bedsheets with the total revenue generated by skiing facilities in the United States. Obviously, those things have nothing to do with one another, but they do very tightly correlate, again, showing that correlation is not causation, and that is the purpose of giving you these silly correlations. I don't know if you've noticed, folks, but people are pretty angry. More and more every day, I talk to more and more people who are just kind of fed up. I talk to people in different scenarios, different social settings, just whatever. And when people find out what I do, they, of course, often chime in with something, right? Whether it's, well, I don't care about politics, or I don't know anything about politics, or they give me their political opinions. And I'll tell you, the past 6 months, there's been a significant increase in the number of people who want to vote everybody out. They hate them all. You know, there's a real undercurrent of negativity out there, caused appropriately, I guess, by the politicians and what they are or are not doing. If you look, I always go to Real Clear Politics, try to aggregate multiple polls together to get rid of the skew factor. And right now, 63.3% of Americans believe that the country's on the wrong track, and only 26.5% of Americans believe we're on the right track. And that's pretty low. There have been lower periods over the course of the last 5-6 years, but in general, it's kind of, you know, those are usually dips, and they, you know, recover. If you drew a trend line, you can see that people are generally just more and more thinking we're on the wrong track, and fewer people think we're on the right track. And I think that that's going to be reflected in a few different ways. First of all, what's very interesting to me are the number of people who are directly tied to and part of the political establishment. They may not have a big name for themselves, but they are part of the political establishment. And they are disguising themselves as reformers and outsiders. And they'll spend a whole bunch of money trying to convince you that they are the outsider. I'm a new name. I'm here for change. And yeah. But the reality is they're being bankrolled and have direct connections to the same old political establishment. And that's one strategy. The other strategy is, and we've seen this here in Kentucky and now again in Mississippi, which we'll get into in a moment, but it's the fear, the new guy, and spend a whole bunch of money building negative brand ID and basically tearing down challengers to the political establishment rather than building up candidates. And we've seen a lot of this. We saw that here in Kentucky with our U.S. Senate race. We've seen it in other smaller races where, one or both strategies, one of the other strategies typically, is being used to corral voters. And, you know, it's one thing to beat down your opponent on flaws and whatever, and even that, people are really, really sick of that. It's another thing entirely to disingenuously or just outright fraudulently claim that you're some sort of outside candidate when the reality is that you're being backed by the same old people. It's very, very interesting. We're seeing some of that here in Kentucky in the governor's race. Right now, there's only one person who's declared in the governor's race, right? And in the governor's race here in Kentucky, you've got two people declared on the Republican side. Hal Heiner, who's a businessman from Louisville, and James Comer, who is our current agriculture commissioner. It's very interesting to watch this race develop, the dynamic develop. Comer is not really necessarily an establishment guy. While he's worked with the establishment on stuff, he was a huge champion of industrial hemp way before there was political benefit to doing so. And in fact, he was one of the people that out cheerleading industrial hemp helped build popular support and build the popular support that there is now in Kentucky for industrial hemp. So it's entertaining that, only 3-4 years ago, I guess we'll go with 4 years ago, the political establishment was laughing at people like Gatewood Galbraith for pushing things like industrial hemp, only to have the following year have, major party players start to jump on board at political risk, make no mistake. The political establishment didn't want to touch this issue. They jumped on board, ran on it, and won for office, and then followed through. And, industrial hemp, as we've talked about on the show multiple times, is not the silver bullet that saves Kentucky. We've got a lot of problems. But that's one little thing, and every little thing helps. Hal Heiner was and is tied into the Louisville GOP establishment. The Louisville GOP establishment is hardcore. The Louisville Republican Party is hardcore behind Hal Heiner, and my sources tell me that you can't find somebody in the party apparatus that isn't backing Hal Heiner 100% right now, in Louisville, that is. And so it's really entertaining to watch this whole who's the outsider, right? You've got a guy who's elected to office versus a guy who was elected to office, and Heiner was a Metro Council person, which, by the way, those races are just about as big as state house races. Here's a guy who was on Louisville Metro Council, who ran for mayor and lost, and so now he's not elected to anything. And they're both arguing over who's the outsider, and I think that's pretty entertaining in a way. Nobody wants to call themselves the Tea Party guy, but everybody's running a race as if they're the Tea Party guy. Everybody's running the race as if they're the outsider, as if they're the one who is the reformer. They're the one who's going to fix everything. And it's interesting to see the long-term impact of the Tea Party, because that's what we're seeing here. The long-term impact is, despite whatever the media has said, whatever the Republican establishment has said, the reality is the public is fit to be tied, and they want change. In many ways, that's how Obama got elected in 2008 to begin with. I mean, this isn't really a new phenomenon. It's a building phenomenon. It continues to build. And I think that getting any better, I think that the political realities out there are that we're not going to see any major fixes in the next year or two. I think it'll be very interesting to see how this governor's race shapes up next year. And I don't know. I don't think things are going to get better. I don't see anybody coming out with a comprehensive plan. Even if it's, you know, at a 10,000-foot level, nobody seems to have a plan as to how they're going to make Kentucky better. Or at the national level, they don't have a plan on how they're going to make the country better. And so people are rightfully still upset, and they're going to continue to be upset. And make no mistake, the political establishment is very, very fearful of people like you and me, the everyday people, especially the ones that used to just go into the voting booth and do the straight ticket, not paying attention to who they were voting for. Those days are quickly fading away because people are angry. They're looking for answers. And yeah, sure, there's still the useful idiots out there that go, "Oh, I'll vote for a Democrat no matter what," or "I'll vote for a Republican no matter what." But those people are, I guess they're shrinking as a percentage. I don't think necessarily they're going down in numbers, but the new voters, the young voters, the people coming in and it's interesting because the new voters are not affiliating with D's and R's. And for that matter, a lot of people who were D's and R's are disaffiliating. I think you're going to have your hardcores no matter what, but there is a change. A change is coming. And, you know, one of the ways you can see that, you know, here in Kentucky, our U.S. Senate race was pretty amazing, really, that and let's be honest, a no-name challenger to Mitch McConnell, the most powerful legislator in the country, pulled 40% of the vote. That's pretty significant. And given that those people still are not happy with Mr. McConnell, and given the antics going on in other states that are in part fueled by Mitch McConnell, I believe that McConnell's actually in trouble politically. And, you know, how often is it that you hear about the leader of a legislative house being knocked out? Not too common. Not too common at all, but it's a real possibility. You know, I've been watching, there's been a lot of media around this Mississippi race. And for those that haven't been following it, Mississippi held their partisan primary about 3 weeks ago, almost 4 weeks ago now. The way that Mississippi works is that they do have a runoff. If no candidate gets over 50% of the vote, they hold a runoff 3 weeks later. Now, in the first time around, the quote-unquote Tea Party guy, which, Chris McDaniel, not the one from here in Kentucky, obviously, received 49.5% of the vote, literally 0.5% less than what was necessary to win the race in a three-way race. And this forced a runoff. He was the top vote-getter, but it wasn't over 50%. So this forced a runoff. In the runoff, the National Republic Senate Committee, NRSC, spent, at least according to some reports, upwards of $800,000 $800,000 to specifically run ads and a campaign in favor of the incumbent who'd been there approximately 40 years. And the incumbent did end up winning the runoff. Actually, there were a lot more people that came out in the runoff than there were in the original primary. The original primary had about 314,000 people, 313,500 people. The runoff had 372,000 people. So you're talking about a net increase of about 60,000 voters. And the race was still very, very close. You're talking about a 5,600 vote margin, somewhere in there. I don't know. It's something like that. It's not a lot in the grand scheme of things. One of the things that the Republican establishment did was they made robocalls into Democratic, usually Democratic, black households and ran robocalls saying that the Tea Party guy was a racist and they needed him to come out and stop this racist from getting into office. Now, understand it's a little bit different in Mississippi. They don't have closed primaries. Now, I know a lot of people get very passionate about the primary system and how it's done. I believe in closed primaries, and this is an example of why. With the Democratic primary out of the way, there were a lot of people who just didn't vote in either primary the first time around, eligible to vote in the runoff, which in some ways I really disagree with. I really think that it should have only been the people who voted in the Republican primary the first time should have been allowed to vote the second time with the other guy kicked out, right? The number three guy removed. That's a very slow way of doing what we do internally in the Libertarian Party, which is instant runoff voting. Here in Kentucky, we use instant runoff to narrow our choices down so we don't have to do it over and over and over, but it's essentially the same thing. You remove the lowest, the person who receives the lowest number of votes, and you retally again, and you find out from the votes that were cast who actually ended up with the real majority. And so because they don't have voter registration, they reached out to Democrats and basically ran all kinds of scare tactics about, and I shouldn't say Democrats because there's no registration, to people who typically vote Democrat, and did all kinds of scare tactics to convince them that they had to come to the polls to vote against this crazy racist Tea Party guy. And that's being attributed to where the bump came in. Meanwhile, of course, the Tea Party groups, the national Tea Party groups, ran ads and robocalls and whatnot to boost the total for the Tea Party guy, Chris McDaniel. And so what started out as a 2,000-vote margin for McDaniel ended up as a roughly 6,000-vote deficit because more people voted the second time around. There are a lot of accusations flying around. Lawsuits have been filed. This is going to be a real big mess, a real big mess. But I have to ask people, you know, what the folks that are loyal to party brand, the ones that vote loyal to party brand, you have to ask yourself, what are you doing? Because what happened here is that the establishment is making the assumption, perhaps correctly, it's been that way for a long time, they're making the assumption that no matter who gets through the primary, that the people who typically vote Republican will still vote Republican, and therefore it doesn't matter the dirty tricks or the nasty stuff that they do to get people through the primary. And the only way you can fix that problem is to reject that outcome, to do something different. And the question is, will people do something different? Now, in this particular race, there will be three candidates, at least according to what I saw. There will be a Democrat, a Republican, and a Reform Party candidate. Mississippi is apparently one of the states that still has a state affiliate of the Reform Party. I'm not real familiar with Mississippi, but they listed the guy as a Reform Party candidate, so I don't know. The real question is, will people who do not like the dirty tricks, do not like the tactics that we're engaged in, do not like what went down, will they just go, oh, well, golly gee shucks, I still have to go vote whatever. They do that, then you are rewarding bad behavior. You're encouraging more of that behavior. At the end of the day, it is a free market principle that so long as there is a monopoly or an oligopoly, and you, the consumer, are still going to buy that product no matter what, whether it's because you have to or because you think you have to or because you want to, if there's no competition, or if you've artificially limited competition, still buying, then there will be no increase in the quality of the good that is for sale. In this case, it is the candidates that are for sale, and not in the bad way. I mean, they probably are, but that's another story. The point is that as long as voters are willing to pull the lever to support candidates that win by hook or by crook in the primary, then you're encouraging that behavior. You're encouraging people to continue to do everything they can by hook or by crook to win these primaries. And until people are willing to stand up and say, no, just I'm not going to play that game, I refuse to vote for bad candidates, then it won't change. And there's options, just like there are here in Kentucky. Mississippi voters, Kentucky voters, voters all around the country, there are usually options. You can end up voting for the establishment Republican. You can end up voting for whoever the Democrat was that won. Or you can vote for the Reform Party person. Or you can vote for no one at all. Those are your four options. And each option sends a different message. If you are a typical Republican voter and you vote Democrat, that is specifically a hard vote against the Republican, because chances are good that the Democrat or Republican will win just by the nature of the race. So voting directly against the Republican is a giant slap in the face. Another option is to vote Reform Party. Now, I don't know anything about that guy. Assuming that the Reform Party candidate is not some kind of crazy nut, and, you would actually like to see that person in office, you're sending a message that, no, we want better candidates, right? That's assuming that this guy is actually a better candidate. The final option is to not vote in the race at all. And I don't like that option, because the problem with it is it doesn't create any metrics. There's no metric by which the political establishment can be held to account to say, oh, well, 5% of the vote didn't turn out because they just didn't like anybody. There was no mechanism to say, we hate everybody. And the problem is, if you just don't vote, your not vote gets mixed in with the people who are like, I don't know anything about politics anyway. It gets mixed in with I could go vote, but I'm watching TV. And so your message gets muddled, and there's no clear market determiner or no way for the people to go back and determine in the marketplace of ideas who voted how and why. They can't separate the philosophical non-vote from the too lazy to get off their butt non-vote. And that's a problem. So I would encourage people to really think about what you're going to do in November out of all these primaries. You do have options. Here in Kentucky, you will have options. In Mississippi, you will have options. There are options. There's going to be a number of people who run as write-ins for U.S. Senate in Kentucky, I know for sure. One of them was somebody was holding up a sign at the Fort Mitchell Parade up here. He's a racist, so I definitely won't be voting for him. But he did have a sign, and I'm sure he's running as a write-in, and so be it. There are some other folks that aren't comfortable with the people who are likely to be on the ballot and are running as write-ins as well. And that's their right to do so. And it's your right as a voter to decide who to vote for. You can do whatever you want to do. But I just warn you that what you choose to do does send a message. It's not just about, well, we got to stop the Democrats. It's not just about, we've got to stop the Republicans. You're sending a message. Your vote is your voice. You say something with your vote. And I strongly encourage you to consider what it is you're saying with your vote. This is just kind of a silly thing here. And we're almost to the bottom of the hour, so I want to knock this one out. Poll of modern presidents. There's been a lot of talk about this. I've talked about this with other people. We're at a point in history where, you know, most people that are voting go back to about JFK at the most, right, and then forward. And when you say modern history, most people aren't thinking back even to JFK. Certainly they're not going to consider Nixon the best president, nor Ford, and probably not Jimmy Carter. So you've only got a handful of people to really choose from. And of the choices, Reagan is still at the top. Now, I don't have the actual data here because, unfortunately, I don't have the full survey, much to my dismay. I would hope could be Bill Clinton because, quite honestly, everybody else has sucked. Co-host Dave is telling me, so did Clinton. Well, yeah. But compared to everybody else, he was kind of a saint. If you look at everybody post-Reagan, you got Bush 1 and 2, you got Clinton, and you got Obama. Of those four, who's the best? Yeah, NOTA's not an option in this race. Anyhow, the point is that it is very interesting, and it says something about our electoral system. It says something about who we're choosing. Again, going back to the theme here, right, of your vote is your voice, what does it say that we've elected people that we're not even proud that we elected? In hindsight, who's like, man, I'm sure glad I voted for Bush 41. Woohoo! Nobody. Well, a few people, but they're crazy. And you know, honestly, you look, the polls now, nobody's really happy. Even the Obama supporters aren't happy with Obama. They're just like, well, at least it's not Romney. Yay. I mean, that's like...
There's a point there.
Yes. And so the point is that we've started changing the system. I really do believe there's a fundamental shift that's about to occur in politics because people are tired of this. They're just really, really tired of it. And in some ways, people are taking things into their own hands because the electoral system... The politicians just aren't responsive anymore. A really good example of that, that unfortunately we cannot do in Kentucky because we have very limited rights in this regard, was the decriminalization/legalization of marijuana in Colorado. Nationally, there is popular support for decriminalizing marijuana. Even here in Kentucky, looking at the three separate classifications, support for industrial hemp was like at 70%, support for medical marijuana is above 50%, and even straight up just, you know, straight legalization, including recreational use, is over 40%. Something I never thought I'd see the day in Kentucky, quite honestly, but it is. And because of states like Colorado and Washington who have the ability to put these things to voters, and in fact, it's my understanding that Florida has it this year on their ballot. And, of course, the political establishment and powers that be are trying to scare all the old folks. Oh, my gosh, crazy anarchy in the streets, man. Crime, bad people. Ah! Despite all the fear campaigns, despite all the silly tactics, what we're actually seeing is positive results. The DEA has now requested that the FDA reschedule. I guess they're the ones that are asking to reschedule. I thought they had control of this. I don't quite understand the story, but basically the FDA being asked to reschedule marijuana down from a Schedule One drug, which are the drugs of no use and no consequence and highly addictive, really bad, oh my gosh, death drugs. And we're actually seeing change in that regard. And what's come of it and what's very interesting are the results. And now I've, of course, lost the story. My browser crashed right before. What's come of it is that crime is down, tax revenue is up, employment is up, all good stuff. The fear, the, oh my gosh, the world will come to an end. It will be the end of Western civilization in Colorado if we do this. The fear tactics, the fear mongering, none of that's come true. Now, certainly there's been a few negative things. There's kids that have gotten a hold of marijuana, you know, young kids. That stuff you're going to deal with no matter what. I'm betting that the incidence of that is no different than kids getting a hold of a bottle of aspirin or whatever else. But the reality is we have spent $1.5 trillion fighting the war on drugs in the course of the last 40 years. That equates to almost 9% of our national debt. Now, think about that. 9% of our national debt could have, instead of being wasted on a failed policy that has not reduced the rate of addiction at all, it stayed steady the entire time, even as the budget's ramped up, we could have instead been doing other things with that money. Number one, it would have been nice to not put the country in a massive amount of debt. I think I would like to have seen that money just not spent. But alternately, you know, we're still bashing about these bridges and infrastructure. And oh, my gosh, the transportation highway funds are out. Meanwhile, they're building river walks and trolleys to nowhere with transportation funds. But beyond that, we're trying to build a $2 billion bridge. $2 billion. But we've spent $1.5 trillion fighting a problem that we've gotten nowhere with. Ineffective. How many bridges is that? 750? Yeah, 750 bridges we could have built with that money. Probably more, because that's over time in just raw dollars, not indexed to inflation. So the point is that in many ways, we are going to have to take things into our own hands in the ways that we can. Even in the state where we're limited in how we can do that, we're going to have to take control. We are going to have to demand that our legislators do a better job. We need to demand that our state and local legislators do their job and do it the way we want to stop wasting money on stupid garbage that we don't need or don't even really want. These river walks cater to like 3% of the population, yet we're spending $100 million to put one in. Hey, that's, you know, what? Trying to do math quickly in my head. 5%? 5% of a bridge? Something like that. The point is, it's a lot of money being spent on garbage we don't want, we don't need. And we need to hold our legislators accountable. There are things that we can do, and that's what we need to do. We need to stop spending the money on crap and start having our legislators pay attention to what it is that we want, the things that we need. All right, I'm way over for a break. We're going to take a quick one. I'm playing a different song, by the way. This is the song I use for the intro and outro on the show. So enjoy that. It's another one from my buddies up at State of Being in Cleveland, Ohio. And we'll be back here in just a few minutes. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Back in a minute. Log Talk is broken. We can't take a break. And no one can call in. Really? That's interesting. That's nice. Well, we're going to try this one more time here, folks. Well, that's frustrating. You know, sometimes the Blog Talk Radio interface just likes to die and doesn't play nice with us. And that's going to make it difficult to have a conversation during the second half of the show. Okay. I actually just reloaded. Go ahead and hit play. See if you can get it to work. Definitely no audio. Absolutely no audio. All right. Hold on for just a moment, folks. We're going to try to work on this. Please hold. Can you hear me? Really? All right, folks. We've got this figured out. We're the audio is broken, but we're going to do this anyway. We're going to do this the hard way, which is microphone to speaker, and we'll get it done. I apologize for the technical problems. I don't know why, but it just happens sometimes. So anyway, we roll with the punches, and we get it. All right, here we go. Folks, we'll be back here in just a few minutes. You are listening to Liberty. I'm Brad on the My View Matters Radio Network. Yeah, we'll be back here in just a moment.
First impressions are the most important thing. They're the only thing. And Ernie's Print Shop will produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop, over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com, 502-969-8585. Man,
you have options to help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springs of the Vibrant Manic Radio Show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the streets with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace. Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. I apologize, folks. For some reason, the call-in number is not working tonight. Co-host Dave was having trouble dialing in, and Blog Talk's just acting terrible tonight. I can't get the chat room back up. I don't know what's going on. They're obviously having problems on their side. We are broadcasting, which is good. At least that piece is working. I guess it's a minor detail, at least to get that part working, since that's the point of the whole thing. But we're going to have to wing this. I'm actually now in the same room as co-host Dave, and we're just going to hand the mic back and forth, and that's the way we're going to make this work tonight, because there's really no other way to make it work tonight. So I apologize, folks. We usually love to have your calls. Unfortunately, it's just not working tonight, and hopefully they'll get that fixed for us next week, or hopefully they'll get it fixed today so that the rest of the shows on the network aren't broken the rest of the week. But all right, well, let me hand the mic over to co-host Dave and see what his thoughts are here. I know you had, before the show, we were talking about the wasteful spending at the local levels and concerns you had on that.
Ken, this is a wonderful time of year for, most Americans. We celebrate our independence, which for those of us who really pay attention and like to celebrate what it really is, we think back to 1776. Many of us, spend time with our families, in going to parades, fireworks, et cetera. It's the parades that really kind of hit me. There are other things that happen around this time of year. Parades, are big, not just for Independence Day, but for Memorial Day. And my family and I went to the Memorial Day parade this year. We also attended a parade for July 4th, Independence Day. And I was both humbled and frightened at what I saw. I saw in both parades some reenactors, students of history. I saw Benjamin Franklin. I saw Thomas Jefferson. I saw several folks. I was very, very, very humbled, to see them. So that was pretty cool. They continually make their appearance. I also saw several of our veterans, humbled by them. Several active military personnel, humbled by them. And I saw our police forces, and that's where the fear came in a little bit for me and my family, several others. The police state is upon us, and I am not a tinfoil hat wearing libertarian, although I love my brothers and sisters that wear the tinfoil hats. My family has a long-standing history in of military service. And so there are many folks, that I've grown up with being very interested in military technology, weapons, transportation, planes, trains, and automobiles. And so there's always an apparatus kind of frenzy, the new toys, that we have, in our community. I've grown up, appreciating that for the most part. Usually it's the fire apparatus that we're really happy to see. And so I like seeing new pumpers and, even hazmat trucks, and things of that nature. But the SWAT tanks and the Humvees, not Hummers, mind you. There's been a long-standing disinformation campaign, you know, in our country to make it look like Humvees and Hummers are the same. They are not. But the military-grade Humvees, the tanks, you know, the SWAT weapons, you know, everything that's on display, and beyond anything else, the mass casualty unit.
Say it again.
The mass casualty unit that was purchased with our tax dollars, make no mistake about it. We're not talking about something that our community got for free. We're talking about something that our community got by DHS funds that came from our tax dollars. Frightens the living crap out of me. What the heck does Northern Kentucky need multiple mass casualty units for? Even if they're free, why? We've never needed a mass casualty unit for a flood, and we've had some pretty nasty ones. Traffic accidents, and we've had some pretty nasty ones. Never has there been any reason for a mass casualty unit. And the fear came in when I stopped and thought about it. I was like, oh, hey, that's kind of neat. Oh, wait a minute. Why do we need a mass casualty? Why do we need a – wait a minute. Okay, even if we don't need a mass casualty unit and we have one now, what's going to happen when we start questioning that? Government is really, really good at justifying the things that it has. And so that's where the fear came in. So I'm not really sure what to say, you know, about it beyond that. Scared the living crap out of me. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think the main issue for me is, you know, we've spent a lot of money on a lot of things we don't need. You know, nefariousness aside, you're exactly right. We don't need a mass casualty unit in, well, pretty much anywhere in Kentucky. I don't recall a time when we've had a need to, in the old Monty Python sense, you're dead. You know, we don't live in those times. And is it maybe, like you said, maybe something we don't know? Is somebody, like, holding back? Or is this just a, well, this seems like a good idea to build a whole bunch of these, and now we don't have any use for them, so we'll give them away to communities and make them, you know, house them and insure them and figure out where to put these things. I you know, either way, it's spending that didn't need to be, it's money that didn't need to be spent. We continually talk about on this show the crumbling infrastructure in the country and how we have priority problems. We're spending money on river walks and passenger or walking bridges across rivers, but we're not spending money on the highways. And for that matter, we've talked about in the past sewage and water that, you know, there's been a number of stories that have said, look, these things are all 50-plus years old. They've really reached the end of their functional use. One story had an estimate that it was going to cost $1.5 trillion to replace all the sewer lines in America. That's a lot of money. And, you know, instead, we've got a mass casualty unit floating around in a couple of counties in northern Kentucky. I really think we have a priority problem. We have a spending priority problem where we're spending money on things we don't need. Then they come back and go, oh, well, there's no money for the cops. There's no money for firefighters. There's no money for things you actually need. So then they just jack up taxes instead. You know, and this is the same old game. We see a lot of this over in Ohio, us being in northern Kentucky. We see this in Ohio where a school levy fails, and rather than cutting the, you know, after-school underwater basket weaving course, they cut school busing because it's painful. They do it on purpose. They inflict pain on voters for not doing what they wanted. And in some ways, this is the same thing. It's irresponsible spending, first, to either bail someone out or buy off a crony or whatever. And then it's like, oh, well, sorry. Boy, we'd really like to build that bridge that you need. But we're out of money, so that's going to cause tolls, or you're going to have to, you know, raise the highway gas tax because we've spent all the transportation funds on things that like 3% of the population cares about.
We'd really like to feed the homeless.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could feed the homeless with the money. You could do anything with the money. I mean, there's pretty much not anything that doesn't fall on the list of better uses of the money than buying a mass casualty unit for Northern Kentucky, and not just one for the whole area, per county. You're talking about counties with 90,000 people total.
You build little temporary shelters under the bridges.
I mean, it amazes me. We've got a massive heroin problem, but we don't have the funds to do rehab centers. The only rehab centers that are being built in jails, which, by the way, is terrible. That means you have to get arrested to get in. That's dumb. That's really dumb. You can't we've got infrastructure problems. We've got drug problems. We've got all these issues. And what are we buying? We're buying military-grade equipment for the police force that sits around and basically gets no use other than parades. We've got
in Northern Kentucky created by statute. These things aren't going to the constitutionally created sheriff's department.
Right.
They're going to the law enforcement created
appointed
by statute.
Right, right. So, and you're exactly right. So it's not elected officials that are in charge of all this equipment either, though it is typically usually the elected officials that do approve the purchase of these things, usually. And, you know, and we're almost out of time, but I this gets back to it's nothing new. This is nothing new as far as spending priority issues. A friend of mine was on city council at one time, and they had an issue come up where there was a push to put amphitheaters in parks. And there's a little park that no one really – I grew up, like, I don't know, 2 miles from it, never knew it existed until I was in my late 20s. And they said, hey, we want to put an amphitheater in this park. And my friend was, you know, a fiscal conservative. He's like, man, you know, we're spending – you know, somebody's money's getting spent here. You know, it may not be coming out of the city's budget, but it's coming out of the state and the feds. And wouldn't that money be better off somewhere else? And how do you justify at the city level voting against something that's quote-unquote free? And it is difficult to vote against free stuff, and I'm doing air quotes. You guys can't see me. I'm doing air quotes here. Free stuff at the local level. And the way you justify not doing that is because even if when it's quote-unquote free, you still have other costs. The mass casualty unit that is owned by Campbell and Kenton counties, respectively, that we know of, there may be more, you got to have a place to house them. You got to fuel them. You got to run them. You got to maintain them. There's money involved even in the free stuff.
You got to pay to put them on display in the parade.
Right. I'm sure they get oh-so-good gas mileage, too. And and insurance as well. The studio audience is chiming in. And we've got all kinds of there's all kinds of secondary and tertiary costs to this stuff. So even though it's quote-unquote free, it's not free. And the dumbest part of all is it wasn't really free to begin with. That money came out of somebody's community. That money came out of somewhere. It's money that could have been spent to fix a sewer system, build a bridge, fix a highway, things that people actually care about. Instead, our police force now has a mass casualty unit for, I don't know, the zombie apocalypse. Let's say something. I mean, I don't know what it's for. I mean, I guess they're planning the zombie apocalypse. I don't know. I don't get it.
That's something I could get behind. I'm not behind this. If they were preparing for the zombie apocalypse, I could get behind that.
I don't get it. I don't understand why we have tanks owned by local police forces. And make no mistake, they're not tanks in the way you're thinking of them with the turret on top, but these are military-grade vehicles that are used to do everything in Iraq, depending on how they're plated. You know, in the Middle East, they could be IED exploding, you know, searching and destroying IEDs, personnel carriers, whatever. We don't need that stuff. We don't need the police to be another military. We don't need all this stuff. Is there some massive need that I'm not aware of that, oh, well, geez, you know, who knew there's gang warfare in the streets? I didn't know that. Silly me, I didn't notice it. Apparently we need all this military-grade equipment to put down these insurrections. I don't understand what the purpose of even having all of this equipment is, much less that, again, we have real infrastructure needs, real problems that need to be resolved, and if they're being ignored, or not ignored, they're just, everybody says, whoop, there's no money for that, sorry. Well, there would be if you didn't spend it on the other.
I don't have a problem with the theory that really guides all of it, right? You know, we need to defend, you know, and prepare. I don't have a problem with that in theory. But the way that the money is allocated is downright frightening. You know, so getting back onto a better level, but not quite up to the wonderful level of the zombie apocalypse. Let's leave that one alone for the moment. It's always about protecting the children, right? Okay, well, let's protect our children. Okay, if that's what this is about, you know, then let's do that. You know, rather than preparing for mass casualties, let's prepare to not have them.
Right.
You know, let's not have mass casualties. You know, so if you're concerned about the children, there's nothing better than, you know, preparing the mama bears, in my opinion. And this is just a dude talking to you. You know, this is just a guy, you know. But, hey, take that money and arm and train our mothers that are willing. That's my idea.
And that would definitely be, like I said, anything would be more efficient than having a mass casualty unit in the counties in Northern Kentucky. Folks, we're out of time. I apologize for the technical difficulties we've had today. You know, every once in a while, Blog Talk blows up on us. And unfortunately, today was one of those days. But it is what it is, and we get through it, and, you know, we appreciate you all being here. Don't forget to tune into the other shows on the network. We do have a lot of other great shows through the week, Monday through Thursday, same time as this show at 7 p.m. Eastern time. But until then, we are out of time, and as soon as I get this typed in here we go. We will catch you next week, same time, same place. You have been listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network, and hopefully next week, no technical difficulties. Thanks for tuning in. Good night.